Hey, everybody, can you believe you're listening to F This Movie again?
No, never.
My name is Patrick Bromley. I sometimes talk on F This Movie, and I'm joined tonight by Doug.
Hey, Vegas, baby, Vegas.
I get your reference.
You do.
Because tonight we're talking about Vegas Vacation. Yes. We're talking about Swingers, and we're going to go out of our way not to say things like money.
Wait. What?
Or what's another quote from
Don't,
baby? I don't want to box you in.
There's no way I can adhere to. There's
We're going to talk about Swingers pretty soon, everyone. So go out and watch it and then come back.
Yeah, press pause right now.
No, I'm saying let it play. Go watch Swingers. Come back. We'll just be starting to talk about Swingers.
That's pretty much our MO.
You're listening to F This Movie, which you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com, facebook.com/fthismovie, twitter.com/fthismovie, dvdverdictpresents.com, and of course in the iTunes store. Last week and possibly the week before, we asked people if they listen to the show through iTunes and they like it to leave us maybe some positive reviews. A few of you actually did that, so thank you so much.
That's very kind.
That's really nice.
And it's really great, and it's kind of falls under the category of what have you done for us lately. So if you're out there, please continue.
At least a few of you have something to point to and
absolutely
say, listen, here's what I did. Here's my contribution.
Right, and you should encourage and pressure your friends to do the same thing.
Please do.
Because we're providing this for free, I think. At least that's Patrick is not paying me.
No.
Unless you're keeping you're all the only sweet, one, though.
Everybody
sweet
else,
royalties for yourself.
Everybody else gets a nice chunk of change.
Nice.
You can always email us, too, at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. All emails will be read and promptly deleted. I'm just kidding. I do try and write back to stuff. If I haven't, it's just my ignorance. I don't know.
Or the emails are really, really stupid.
No email is stupid. Unless it's a spam email.
There's no stupid emails, only stupid
emailers.
Yes. I'm glad I paused there and you filled in, because I didn't have an end to that joke.
That's because we are a well-oiled machine.
Stupid emails need the most attention.
We are actually well-oiled tonight. Doug and I both just buttered up.
It is very odd. I just watched 300, so I figured I'd put some cocoa butter on me.
Doug, what have you seen lately? Have you seen anything good lately? What's the question I asked?
Just say, what have you seen lately?
Pull my finger.
Yeah, exactly. I will not.
What have you seen lately?
Brap. That was Patrick's butthole.
That was JB watching Gladiator.
A fart. I've seen a couple things lately. We did a podcast last week on Iron Giant. I watched the Iron Giant again. I'm kidding. I did not watch it again. I watched it enough for a lifetime. I finally saw The Artist.
Finally!
Best Picture winner the Artist. And I think I commented briefly on The Artist during the last podcast.
Yes, but at that point you hadn't seen
it. I had not seen it yet. And I said, you know, I haven't seen this movie, but it looks like a novelty. It looks like a gimmick. And it is, and it was. And it's so accurate. Its mimicry is really impressive in terms of the font choices and how they break and the type of silent acting. It's impressive. I found the movie overlong. It should have been 70 minutes long. You know, it's fine. It's definitely a fine movie, but just
there's. I want us to be on the poster too. Maybe when it comes out on DVD, just in huge letters. It's fine. ... F This Movie.
I felt like there were some redundant scenes, and I think you pointed out, I don't know if you talked about this on a previous podcast, what your thoughts on The Artist were, but you said something to me that was so impressive, and I'm not.
I don't think I can take credit for that, though.
Who?
I don't have the name in front of me. It was Devin Faraci at Badass Digest published a piece, but I think even he was linking back to someone.
Okay, well, just how the movie's called The Artist, and it shows that an artist makes a passion project and it fails, and that the artist has to go to a studio system in order to succeed. And I'm like, what kind of message is that? It's a
unless the artist is an ironic title.
Right. The Artist? ...
F This Movie.
You know, it's fine. I really enjoyed it fine. I saw it at The Patio, which is a great place, a great theater in Chicago. And if you live in Chicago, you got to go there because they're trying to buy a digital projector and they're showing special older movies on special nights. And all the proceeds from those ticket sales go towards the purchase of a digital projector.
Why don't they do more of those in order to buy a digital projector?
Yeah, they should
because I need to see the Avengers in 3D at the Patio.
I actually just saw this past weekend, I saw their showing of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles from 1987?
The repertory movie that packs the house.
Yeah, well, there was probably about 60 or 70 people there. And the theater's really big, so it looked even thinner. And it was at
finally, our chance to see it on the big screen again.
It was a 9:30 show, so I'm sure that kept people awake,
at
too.
9:30!
But it's really nice out in Chicago.
Oh, man. You gotta have the true surround sound experience when John Candy tells the saddest story ever.
Right. I don't see as many old stuff as you and JB do, especially
we saw The Artist
at the theater. But I always like seeing stuff, especially on a print, which the print was pretty decent, actually.
Yeah.
And with an audience, reacting to all the stuff and just like, laughing along. It's a lot of fun.
The irony there is, if that's successful, they get a digital projector. They stop showing nice film prints.
I would like to think that they're going to keep showing some stuff. But,
why? So much cheaper to just show digital.
I don't really have to say too much about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because I'm sure everyone out there has seen it. Or if you haven't, you should because it's like a
classic.
If you
haven't, you saw it when it was called Due Date.
it's a funny movie, but it's surprising. Like my memory, and I saw it more recently, but I remember when I was a kid watching it with my folks, some of the lines that were the funniest lines in the movie.
Those aren't pillows.
That line is still, it's decent, you know, okay. But it's definitely, that's like the trailer line, I think.
Yeah.
But there's one line where he goes to the counter and meets with Ferris Bueller's secretary.
Yes, Edie McClurg.
Edie McClurg. And he drops the F-bomb left and right. And it's shocking because the movie is devoid of swears pretty much up until that point. And he just, every third word is F this and F that. And at the end of it, the punchline is, she goes, "Well, I guess you're fucked." And I remember that being like, oh my God, that's so, like, slap right. your thigh. It's irreverent. Right. And it's like,
I like to slap my
it died. It died over the theater.
Really?
It didn't go. I mean, people were laughing hard at this movie. And that line was like, no, it's like.
Would it have been funnier if he hadn't sworn before that? If she was the first one to drop the F-bomb?
I don't know.
I don't either. This is why I want to dig up John Hughes, reanimate him.
Oh, if you dig up John Hughes,
yeah.
Can I dig up John Candy?
Yes, we're going to have a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles reunion. No.
Canadian bacon.
Thank you.
And I also saw, as you know, and I've talked about annoyingly for the last week and a half, I got back from London. I'm a world traveler. And I showed, my wife had never seen Shakespeare in Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, you should see it. It seems like it would be something she's interested in. I hadn't seen it in a long...
You guys are doing a retrospective of overrated Best Picture winners, courtesy of Miramax.
That's right. Thank you. No was problem. Artist Miramax or was it Weinstein Company?
Weinstein Company.
Okay. But, well, I just corrected you, didn't I?
You did.
School's in
Not
session.
Not much. Chicago?
It's... it does not hold up.
Okay.
I don't know if I don't want to... You know, there might be a show in the future. I don't know. I'm not... predicting, or I'm not suggesting that there should be a show on Shakespeare in Love. I won't say too much about it. All I'll say is, I watched it with high expectations, and my wife had never seen it before, so she has virgin eyes and a lot of other virgin parts. And it was like a lead balloon, if that's an expression that people still use.
I believe people say that all the time.
The parts that work well, but also those are the parts that are Shakespeare.
Okay.
So Shakespeare still works.
And the parts that question mark F this movie.
The parts that don't work are like Joseph Fiennes in a church flogging himself because he thinks he's responsible for the death of his competitor writer Christopher Marlowe, and it's comical and it's lit weirdly and it's like it's crazy. And when Gwyneth Paltrow, I should stop talking about this in case there's a what else, the last thing I'll say. Gwyneth Paltrow shows up. I know we should suspend our disbelief,
right?
But it's like she shows up and she's wearing a mustache, and it's like, well, that's Gwyneth Paltrow in a mustache, not Thomas Kent, the young boy actor who loves Shakespeare.
But you saw her boobies. Let me ask you this question about Gwyneth Paltrow. In 1998, when the movie comes out, I don't really have many feelings about Gwyneth Paltrow,
right?
Good or bad. And I liked her in the movie, and when she won the Oscar, I was fine with it, because I liked Shakespeare in Love.
Sure.
I haven't seen it really since probably 1999 when it first came
out. And that might be a good reason to have a show, because it's like, I'm curious of your response to it, and also in response to the whole Saving Private Ryan dialogue that we have here at the site.
Right. So I thought she was fine. I thought she did a good job in the movie. In the years since, I've grown to sort of really dislike Gwyneth
Paltrow. I think a lot of people have.
Yeah, because she just, not as an actress, whatever, but like she's smug and insufferable. And I find it hard to divorce those feelings when I'm watching her acting.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, she still does
a serviceable... So I feel like going back to Shakespeare in Love, I would just hate her retroactively.
So you're weirdly defending what possible change of opinion you might have of
the
movie
no.
based on present-day expectations?
No, I'm saying that's in addition to the other problems.
Okay. You know, it's true. I think that she is incredibly smug. She, I mean, all the thing, like, she named her fucking kid Apple. I mean, again, that's a joke at this point. Ha, ha, ha. But it's still like, well, think about that for two seconds.
Celebrities are special and better than us.
And she lives in a castle in England, and she has a goop digest or whatever it's called, and she's buddies with Jay-Z. And it's like, oh, just, like, stop it. Just, like, take the route of Blythe Danner and become a person that kids don't know.
Make some Meet the Parents movies.
Right. So, Patrick, that's what I've seen lately. What have you seen lately?
I saw Shakespeare in Love.
Oh my god.
No. Wait. Show us. Wait. Boring. Oh. I saw a movie called Friends with Kids.
Oh.
Which is currently in release.
I wanted to see that.
And directed by Jennifer Westfeldt.
Kissing Jessica Stein's Jennifer Westfeldt?
Yes. Ira and Abby's Jennifer Westfeldt. I kind of wanted to see it because I like romantic comedies. I really like the people in it. It's basically just four people from Bridesmaids and then Jennifer Westfeldt and Adam Scott, and I'm a huge Adam Scott fan.
Adam Scott's the bomb.
I did not...
people should watch Party Down, and I'm talking about myself because I've seen two episodes and I need to watch more of it.
I did not like the movie. The first half hour, 45 minutes are incredibly smug and self-satisfied. And part of this, again...
This is Smugcast, isn't it?
It really is, well, almost every episode with us has been Smugcast. Mm-hmm. There's been a growing debate, and this Gwyneth Paltrow thing sort of speaks to it, and I talked about it a few weeks ago on the Braveheart show with Mark Ahn. It's like, the more you start to know about a particular artist, does that influence your feelings towards their work? Jennifer Westfeldt, a couple years ago, wrote a movie called Ira and Abby about a couple that basically decides that they're sort of better than conventional marriage. That, like, conventional marriage, that's for squares, man, and we are different, and we're special. And that's sort of the conclusion that the movie comes to, that, okay, like, we're better than that, and it's okay because we're different. And the movie was fine, but there was something about that that rubbed me the wrong way, and it's not, like, because I'm married and I'm like, you're putting down this institution to which of which I'm a member, but it just felt like it bothered me how pleased with herself she seemed.
Okay.
And a lot of that comes through in especially the first like 45 minutes of Friends with Kids, because it's, again, it's about like, these people are all doing it wrong, they're married and then they have kids and then they hate each other and then they get divorced and that's all terrible, so let's do this other thing, and like, I'll just have a baby with my best friend and we'll beat the system. And like, for the most part, it works in the movie. And it's just like, fuck what you guys are all doing. We've figured it out. And that bothered me. And then there's a whole different set of problems in the back half of the movie, which I won't spoil, but, disappointing.
I don't know if your question was rhetorical, but I think that if you're a casual movie
all of my questions are rhetorical, including what have you seen lately?
What haven't I seen lately?
I had to sit through that whole thing about planes and trains and what's the third thing?
Something mobiles.
Just mobiles, right? Like I think, the thing you hang above the baby's crib?
I don't know if your question was rhetorical about does your education of a particular artist change your opinion.
Yeah.
I think to a casual, like, to my nieces and nephews who watch a lot of Dear John and...
the TV show with Judd Hirsch?
I wish. I would actually respect that.
Because where are they finding
that? Right, exactly. I don't think they even know who's making what, aside from the actors on screen. Right. Yeah. I think to a lot of people, even like people that go to Redbox and pick out a movie, and I'm not knocking that at all, because people have busy lives. Like, we just happen to really like movies.
Yeah.
But if you are anywhere, like, have any knowledge of the director or the filmmakers or whatever, I think you can't help but be influenced. Like, well, I just saw, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. Quentin Tarantino is the only person that pops in my head. But even a Paul Thomas Anderson or an Alexander Payne, who, you know, is great. Your expectations are set at a level. And I know that's not quite what you're saying. You're saying kind of like the style of writing, and the characterizations in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like I carried over this idea that, like, she seemed sort of smug and superior in the way that she approached her last movie. And then when those alarms started going off in this movie, I was like, oh, because she's the one who does that.
Because she's not, and I don't want to sound...
and I don't even dislike her. I like Kissing Jessica Stein. Like,
I don't want to sound douchey, but maybe it's because she's not necessarily an artist. She's more about a storyteller, telling stories from her perspective and her lifestyle. Because I do think about, like, if you really examine, like, a Paul Thomas Anderson, all of his movies, I mean, not all of... They're all... About the, in general, they have, you know, similar threads, but they're totally different. Like, he's going on limbs with There Will Be Blood, and...
They're all about father issues. Except for Punch Drunk Love.
Exactly. That was, thank you for saying that, saving me from that. But my point is, I think that if there, even if there are about father issues, and I'm not doubting that, it's still like the movie is presented in such a way that is...
They're about more than that, I was just kidding.
It could be very well just like that is the foundation and the thesis for all of his movies. I don't know. But I'm saying it's like I've... To go from 70s porn, which is about family, into like Magnolia, this like child prodigy story, and Punch Drunk Love, to there this epic about oil, you know, an oil baron in the early 1900s, I think. It's just crazy to me because it's like, wow, I'm excited to see what comes next because it'll be something completely awesome and also something completely different. And I think that when you watch like an Ed Burns, perhaps, who like he was doing the same. I mean, I know Ed Burns, actually, you told me the other day that he is still making
Doug,
movies.
Doug was alarmed to learn that he still directs movies.
I honestly thought he was acting more than directing movies.
He's in Friends with Kids.
Is he really?
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, Ed Burns is an actor, and like he was, you know, he's kind of, he's recognizable. He's got a way of speaking that's people acknowledge. But I was surprised to learn that he still makes movies, but because his first few movies are all just like the same. It's like, well, you're just drawing from all of your personal experiences. Like, this is your girlfriend.
Right.
This is what your life was like in Brooklyn, you know.
Right. You'll be delighted to know that every movie he's made since has also been the exact same.
He's like the Irish Catholic New York version of Woody Allen.
And definitely really wants to be, like, more than anything. But yeah, he's made probably 15 movies, all of them the same.
So that was a rambling little thing that I just did where I was schooled a couple times by you.
Not really.
And but I think that to answer your question, like, how do you not influenced or impacted by... You know what you previously saw.
I wonder if I hadn't,
especially if you dislike something about it. Like obviously Quentin Tarantino, I love. I can't wait to see that those elements in the next movie. But if you're just like, oh, I don't like all the talky talk, and it's in the next movie, it's like, well, fuck that.
I was wondering like if I hadn't seen Ira and Abby, which is totally understandable because not a ton of people have. Would it be bothering me so much? I don't know, or would I even be as sensitive to it as I was? There was something else I wanted to talk about seeing. Again, still watching a lot of action movies. I saw a movie called Father's Day, not the hilarious Billy Crystal Robin Williams movie where their son wants to be a roadie for Sugar Ray. which, by the way, that movie came out at a time when Sugar Ray hadn't even broken. Like, I didn't know who Sugar Ray was yet. When the band became popular, I was like, the fucking band from Father's Day?
They weren't higher than high yet.
This is a movie that's being distributed by Troma. And you know, I mean, I'm a fan of the...
You like B-movies?
The Troma movies.
Lloyd Kaufman?
And it's maybe in limited release now, and it's kind of playing midnight shows over the next couple months. I shouldn't even really talk about it. There will be a review of it up at dvdverdict.com sometime soon. I don't know, depending on when this episode comes out and when the review gets
posted.
When is
this drop is my question.
Exactly, yeah. This will drop on Wednesday.
Oh.
But I don't know when the review will run. So if you really want to read my full thoughts on Father's Day, go to dvdverdict.com. I found it a frustrating experience. I had actually heard really good things, and again, I like Troma movies for the most part. It was just one of these movies. It does certain things really, really well. Like, it's another one of these movies that the film's all scratchy and it like starts with like a fake promo, like you're watching a bad UHF TV station, and at 6 o'clock it's Star Warriors, and now at 4 it's Father's Day, and it stops halfway through for like a commercial break, and it's just another one of these like sort of fake grindhousey movies, you know. Which is very much sort of...
Did Lloyd Kaufman direct it, or is it something they bought the property?
Yeah, it's a pickup. It's directed by a group of, like, guys who call themselves Astron 6, which I thought is douchey. But they're all... It's all the guys in the movie, like, they wrote it, and they star in it. And,
oh, the Astron 6.
And it was made for, like, $10,000 or something, which is super impressive, especially if you see the movie. But it's a movie that definitely goes way out of its way to be, like, as outrageous... as possible. There's a very long graphic sex scene between a guy and his sister. There's another scene where a guy who's like a serial killer.
This doesn't seem outrageous yet.
Who like anally rapes men and
not yet.
Kills fathers.
Yet. Okay.
There's a close up of him like injecting a needle into his penis and then slicing it. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And again, it's all like supposed to be sort of funny. It's not trying to be horrifying necessarily,
right.
Which helps that go down, if that makes sense. But
oh, yeah.
I felt a little bit like, oh, sometimes you're trying too hard, Father's Day. Where's Sugar Ray? When
Sugar Ray makes everything better.
Sugar Ray just wants to fly.
Do you think that if only they would answer the phone?
You went with a kind of a deep Sugar Ray cut.
I know two Sugar Ray songs.
I would have gone with Every Morning, There's a Halo hanging.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, right.
A much more popular Sugar Ray song.
It absolutely is.
Answer the Phone.
I used to like Answer the Phone, and it, like, I didn't know it was Sugar Ray, and I'm like, oh, this is like a power pop, like in the vein of Weezer, and I'm like, oh, Sugar Ray, I've lost all credibility.
I was going to make a Sugar Ray joke, and then I realized the song I was thinking of was the band Lit. The video where, like, Pamela Anderson picks them all up, and, like, do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it You Make Me That's Completely Miserable?
Welcome to Litcast, everyone. Welcome to 90s alternative, late 90s alt power pop, fun rock, garbage, one hit wonder cast. It's a long name for a show. We're working on shortening the title of the show. We're thinking rhetorical cast.
Smug cast.
Let's talk about...
That's me being smug, by the way.
let's talk about Swingers.
Swingers.
From 1996, written by John
sexy.
Favreau. Right? That says that somewhere on the DVD cover, and it's like...
No, I'm talking about the key party I saw. This movie I rented called Swingers, all about these mature adults who brought his wife, and they put their keys in a bowl.
Okay.
And they, wait. They got around, and they made the nookie.
Did you watch The Ice Storm? Because that movie is definitely sexy, but then it stops being sexy at a certain point.
All right, no, I watched The Real Swingers directed
by... For real,
by...
on the DVD, Doug Liman. On the DVD cover somewhere, like a Peter Travers or some one of these...
Wait, do you have it nearby?
No.
Because I'm really curious. Is it made for Earthlings?
One of these idiots says something like, a smart, sexy comedy. And I'm like, I think it's smart. I think it's a comedy.
Right.
I draw the line at sexy.
There's nothing sexy about, unless you find Dorothy.
Again, it's not trying for that. You
no,
know?
Absolutely. Like, I'm just making a dumb like swinging joke, and obviously the DVD cover validates that. So
let's talk about the end of the Iron Giant. We've done a couple of these shows before where we've gone back. We've done the shows where we go back to like our childhood 80s movies, and then we've done the shows like Clerks and Garden State where we go back to like movies that we saw during maybe our more formative years.
High school and college.
Yeah, and like, do they hold up? Do they still mean the same thing to us that they once did?
Right.
How does Swingers hold up?
I might have a different answer this time around.
Okay.
I thought Swingers... I watched it last night, and yes, it was the most fun I've had watching it ever.
Okay, wow.
I watched it with a smile on my face the entire time.
Were you baked?
I was not baked. I was half baked.
So nice and toasted.
I really did watch it and almost expecting that same sort of you know, like, I know this is like it has a place in my heart from when I was, you know, in 96 I was 18 and I liked it a lot back,
voting for the first time.
Right, for Nader. For Al Salvi over Dick Durbin. I remember the ballot.
Like, Illinois Peeps.
Legit. But I it's a great place, you know, a fond place in my heart for this movie. And I was almost expecting it to be like cringeworthy.
Yeah.
And I felt like, and I kind of feel like you might be going the cringeworthy
No, way. Not at all.
I thought so much more of it worked.
Yeah.
Even now with kind of the wisdom and the knowledge that I have now, not to say I'm some sort of really mature, smart guy, but having a successful marriage and having gone through a lot of breakups and having, kind of achieved some success, you know, beyond the, like, post-college, like, what am I going to do with my life?
Right.
And I was so, like, kind of pleasantly pleased with so much of what they say about the, about life and about mm-hmm. relationships and mm-hmm. things, and I really thought it worked.
Yeah. It's a movie that, like, I don't know, it's weird in a lot of ways because it's dated because it's a movie that was so much sort of its time, and I don't even say, like, this isn't a movie that was cashing in on a trend the way that Breakin', I think is popular. Let's make a movie about Breakin',
right?
Or
Lovada. Contagion, because viruses are popular. Exactly.
Everybody loves getting sick. Let's put out that sick movie,
right?
I was gonna go Lumbada, The Forbidden Dance,
Havana Nights.
Yes, exactly.
Dirty Dancing too.
This movie was sort of out in front of that whole scene, actually. Yeah. Like, and you know, I won't say that the movie inspired the scene, because I think the bands were becoming popular around the same time, but like this was very specific to Los Angeles. It hadn't spread out across the country yet. And Swingers wasn't a movie that was popular when it came out. It was one of those that people found on video and became incredibly popular.
Yeah, that's when I first saw it. Right.
Right.
I remember thinking, and there's a lot of, we've talked before, I'm not sure on the podcast or not, but we've talked, the movie Clueless does a lot of great things.
Yeah.
It kind of creates a vernacular, a way of talking, not even specific words necessarily, but just a way of talking that really kind of popularized this specific segment of the population.
It taught an entire generation of girls what the word sporadically means.
And I think that the, I can't even, what's her name? I'm sorry. Wow.
Alicia Silverstone.
Thank you. Wow. It was in my head and it left my head.
The girl from Excess Baggage.
I'm still baked. That she was such this icon for this sort of generation of females that wanted to be rich and have daddies that took care of them, blah, blah, blah. But it also didn't even try necessarily. I'm sure it tried, but it wasn't at this, it seemed like an effortless attempt to capture this language and this way of speaking. And I know we've talked before about how the movie Bring It On, it so desperately tries to cram expressions and ways of speaking down your throat.
Right.
And I'm not even like, I don't even hate Bring It On. I'll be honest. I'll go out there on a limb right now in March of 2012 and say, I don't hate Bring It On.
Yeah.
I think Bring It On has some funny scenes, but I think it desperately tries to like do the same thing in that there's a clique of girls who are cheerleaders in California and they speak this certain way, but it's like, well, that's manufactured. That's not real.
Right.
Whereas Clueless feels real. I used to be so annoyed in Swingers, how the money and the honey babies. And partially my annoyance also came with how this way of talking became very popular.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just one second.
And my point simply is I watch it now, and we'll talk about that in a second, but I watch it now, and the movie, it's quaint to me. It is a snapshot of the past, and it's something that is so, and you said it feels dated, but I say it like, yeah, it's dated, but it's also this really warm, like comforting picture window to the past where it's like, wow, that was a thing that we kind of like lived through and it wasn't so bad.
Right,
and like,
right.
And of course, because I'm only a little younger than the characters, I think in the movie or what they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's like, I can kind of relate to that a little more. So,
yeah. Well, right. Like you said, it's the surfaces that are sort of dated because underneath all that, the movie has a lot to say and I think is very, honest about certain things.
Sure.
And it is not about the surfaces, but it's interesting because it's a movie that does kind of exist on these two levels, and I try on this podcast to not pass huge sweeping judgments on different segments of the population. In my personal life, I do it constantly. But I try not to on this podcast. Like, if people really like a certain movie, I try, with the exception of, I think Boondock Saints.
Yeah,
I try and say, like, that's okay. It's okay if you like it. I don't, you know, whatever.
Right.
And here's why.
Where Boondock Saints is like, no one should like this,
here's why. You're a dummy.
Right.
But Swingers is weird because it definitely, you can split it down the middle, like, because a ton of people liked it, and it spoke equally to, I think, guys like you and me as it did to douchebags.
Which is not to say we're not douchebags, just a clarification, like, I don't think we're, and I don't want to step on your toes, I don't think we're cool necessarily.
No, I'm not suggesting that at all.
Right, but it's like, I think what you're saying is, like, we're definitely not the alpha frat guy.
Right, well, because you watch the movie and you either think you're Vince Vaughn or you think you're Jon Favreau.
Right.
And we are Jon Favreau.
Right,
you know? Like, but all the douchebags were like, oh, Vince Vaughn is the best. Vince Vaughn is me. Vince Vaughn is my buddy.
Yeah.
These guys always say buddy, by the way.
yeah, I say buddy.
And I love the way that the movie undercuts so much of the Vince Vaughn character, especially in the last 10 minutes where it like, oh, there's a dark side to this. That scene in the diner where it's like, there's a very dark side to this.
And which then diner?
The first one where he's super drunk.
Yeah.
There's a dark side. And then the other side is
it's two consecutive scenes.
Yeah.
And by the way,
you're a fraud.
A quick little funny thing. I mean, I'm laughing at him making a scene.
Really?
It's funny on screen. I think it's very...
He's great in the movie. And he's the guy that like popped off this movie. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It made him a movie star, and rightfully so.
Well, partially because I guess
then he ruined it. They used the bullshit shtick.
The Jaws theme. Did you hear about this?
No.
They wanted to use the Jaws theme in some scene. So they had to send the scene to Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
Steven Spielberg saw the scene, saw Vince Vaughn, and says, you're cast in Jurassic Park Lost World.
In my worst movie as a worthless character.
But my point is, in that one scene where he's making the scene at the end in the diner, he stands up on the table and he's just being an asshole. I'm laughing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my, this is so ridiculous. And so much of it is like genuine awkwardness. And I've turned a corner. I think 10 years ago, I would not have laughed at awkwardness. And I think with the advent of The Office and all this awkward TV that we have, like, I've kind of come to appreciate it more.
The only thing that gets me through that scene, because I'm Jon Favreau in that scene, just miserable at like what an ad, just embarrassed and miserable for him.
Oh, I couldn't stop laughing.
The only thing,
and I'm not trying to be Vince Vaughn.
I get that it's funny too. Like, I get it, but it makes me so uncomfortable. The only thing that gets me through that scene is the sense that like Jon Favreau, while embarrassed, while bothered by what's going on, kind of doesn't give a shit because he's in this really happy place because he's riding this high from just like hitting on Heather Graham.
Sure.
And like, that's what gets me through that moment. It's like, he can almost tune it out because he's so buzzing from his encounter with Heather Graham.
And my point simply is like, I'm laughing pretty hard at that.
Yeah.
But I also acknowledge like, if I was not even Vince Vaughn, Trent's friend, but if I was in the restaurant across the entire building, I would be stone-faced and rigid and would want to disappear into thin air because I cannot handle situations like that.
Yeah.
And I would think this guy is the biggest asshole on the planet.
Right.
He's a douchebag. But with the comfort of my own home and the TV, I'm able to get past it. Just like the one scene where they're playing hockey and they make Jon Favreau's character, Mikey, get the door and it's Pink Dot.
Right.
And they bring him all the food and stuff. And they're like, is it brown? Is he clean? Let him in. And they're being like, they're doing gay voices. And it's like,
which a whole generation of like frat guys have now co-opted. And like, now if you're hanging out with those guys and you get a pizza delivered, like, that's what those guys are doing in the background. Like, they're quoting Swingers and trying to embarrass you.
The only way that scene pays off is that Jon Favreau then gives him all the money he was given. So it's like, I am so sorry. But that's the movie. It's just a series of events like that where Jon Favreau is kind of embarrassed, but also looks up to the Trent character, you know.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, just, I think, in terms of his confidence and stuff. Because I do think he kind of sees through him.
At the end.
Especially at the end.
But he's, like, the scene where he tells the waitress in Vegas, he says, you come back here I'll give you this 50-cent piece. Yeah. And it is, I give total credit to Vince Vaughn for like making, I mean, it's one thing to be a douchebag. I think it's very easy to be a douchebag.
Yeah.
But to be endearing and have this charm and this swagger.
Right.
And when she comes back and it's, you know, Mike is like, oh my God, holy shit. That's like Jedi mind shit, you know? And it is. And I think that, honestly, I hate to say it. I think some women, not all women, I'm not pigeonholing, but I think someone respond to not, I think all women might respond to confidence, but some women definitely respond to the asshole in man, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, whatever.
It's this weird time capsule of a movie to be between the music and the clothes, and just, it takes place as part of this scene. And just as a person, I'm not really a huge fan of like any specific scene where there's like, there's clothes that go along with this and rituals and music you have to listen to or whatever. But also, like, just everyone is so goddamn young. Jon Favreau is so young, so thin.
He was 30, I think, when they made that.
Vince Vaughn is like, and he kind of had a career before this. I mean, he was heavier, but he was in PCU.
Rudy.
Yeah. And Vince Vaughn had done a couple things. He was in Rudy also.
And but Vince Vaughn is also 4 years younger, I think, than Jon Favreau.
Really?
So he was 26, same with Heather Graham, I think. They're born in 1970.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Vince Vaughn is the one that it bums me out a little bit because I'm really burned out on the Vince Vaughn shtick that he's coasted with on the last 15 years. And like, he's all weird and like bloated and puffy now. And like, it bothers me to look at him because he doesn't look healthy.
Yeah.
And he just does the same shtick in every movie.
I think what it's proven is
it works so well.
What I think, not it's proven, but I think that part of it is his character in Swingers maybe isn't so much a character. It's more him. So obviously, and I think it's undeniable that Vince Vaughn has charm and he's obviously a charming, appealing person to a lot of people, guys and girls.
Yeah.
And his character in Swingers is kind of an exaggeration of that.
Yeah.
But obviously the characters he's played in subsequent movies are just another manifestation of that.
Right.
And so it's like, well,
minus the charm.
Is he really acting or is he just being himself?
Right.
And actually what I read too was that this movie written by Jon Favreau, is very autobiographical in that it was his best friend is Vince Vaughn and Ron Livingston, and they would like console him after, like, he moved to LA after a breakup, or, you know, I don't know what came first, but he was broken up in LA, new transplant, and they helped him through tough times. Mm-hmm. And it was like they went to the diner in the Best Western on whatever street that was, And they got through this together, and then Doug Liman kind of found out about it and said, hey, right. let's make Bourne Identity. let's make Fair Game, but not the Fair Game with Cindy Crawford.
Favreau wanted to direct it originally, but I think maybe it could only get made with Doug Liman or whatever. And it's interesting because this was not Doug Liman's first movie either.
I think what's interesting, I didn't hear that Favreau wanted to direct it. I don't doubt it because obviously he's a director now.
Right.
But Doug Liman was able to get financing for it, but it was also a weird hiccup too because he pitched it to the studios and they said, yes, we want to make it. And he says, well, I want to cast the writers as the guys. And they said, no. So he had to then go out and get more financing. Right. So it's all these like stepping stones. And I actually heard that he and Favreau and Vince Vaughn used to do these like readings in public to kind of drum up support for it. And I'm like, I can't even imagine the effort that went towards making Swingers,
right.
which almost seems like, and don't get me wrong, I really like the movie. But it almost is a disposable type of stepping stone movie for their careers. And by the way, I say that liking Swingers almost more than almost everything else that they've done, you know?
Right. Yeah, right.
But it still seems like they did this, they got that behind them, and now they can do Wedding Crashers or, you know?
Right. Well, and again, that's part of the movie's charm, I think, is that you can tell that so much went into it. And the 90s were this time where, like, a lot of these movies had these stories behind it of guys working so hard to get this, their one passion project made, and then it kind of breaks them. And, it, you know, this movie makes Jon Favreau, it makes Vince Vaughn, it makes Doug Liman.
Right.
It helps sort of cement Heather Graham, although really it was, like, Boogie Nights the next year that kind of blew her up for a while.
Did she, like, did this have any influence on her casting in Boogie Nights?
I don't know for sure.
Because, I mean, if it did, then this movie obviously propelled her, but if not, I mean,
Right, so it's this huge personal story that makes stars out of, you know, a lot of the people involved. And it's interesting, too, that Doug Liman had to get more funding because the movie is shot so, like, guerrilla style and almost, I think, awkwardly so at times. For the first time watching it, there were scenes that were cut together or shot that reminded me of, like, an Ed Burns movie from the 90s. And Doug Liman, you know, is a really talented director, and his stuff is pretty slick. And when it's not, it's sort of a choice, you know, like Bourne Identity or whatever. Like, it's not as slick as some other action movies, but that's an aesthetic choice. And this movie at times to me felt like, oh, this feels like a first movie. And it wasn't. He made a shitty movie called Getting In a few years prior with, I think, Charlie Schlatter and Calista Flockhart. And
I never heard of it.
Matthew Perry. But nobody did.
I see what you're saying. Christy Swanson. It was guerrilla style. And I think that some things, it makes sense. If they're shooting on the side of a road outside Las Vegas where they don't have permits, like they obviously are like literally... Like I'm assuming like a van behind their car and that whatever that car that was, the Galaxy, a Ford Galaxy, maybe. and they're guerrilla style shooting before the cops come. And I think actually cops showed up and they were just like filming, like kind of like not looking in the viewfinder. And in the casino, but there's other scenes though too, to your point, where it's like you're in Jon Favreau's apartment. Focus the camera.
Yeah,
there's like his ear was in focus, but his face was out of focus in one scene. Or at the end where they're swing dancing, and again, that might be more of an organic thing where the take was so great, Jon Favreau swing dancing with Lorraine, Heather Graham. They dance and it's really great. There's camera shadows all over his shirt.
Yeah. Well, there's shadows throughout the movie.
Right. Well, there's shadows in life.
There's, you know, it's obvious that they're working with a really small crew because that's part of what's neat about the movie too, is that they have access to all these places in LA, just restaurants and clubs and weird back entrances, obviously, which is just a reference to Goodfellas or like casinos in Vegas that were like all still operate. They didn't shut these places down to shoot. Everything was still open. So it's just this tiny crew of like Favreau and Vince Vaughn and Doug Liman and maybe like one other guy. Doug Liman didn't operate the camera, did he?
It says in the opening credits it says directed and photographed by Doug Liman.
Okay, so yeah, he did. So I thought he did. So it's super small crew.
Unless he just had like a cameraman, which I don't know why he would.
I'm sure he operated the camera. So, and again, it doesn't bother me. I know exactly what you're
talking
about.
It doesn't bother me either.
The movie has sort of that very rough charm to it.
And kind of going back to how I think it's more of this quaint memory of that era. I kind of miss movies like this. I don't really know of a lot of movies where it's got like a bunch of guy friends who are trying to be adults.
No, because it won't take them seriously anymore. I had that same thought as I watched it. I'm like, wow, the way that these guys talk to each other, and like the conversations that they have don't exist in movies now because it's guys being honest with one another about their feelings.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really happen anymore because now guys in movies, it's The Hangover. Like,
Right.
That's what we get. That's the way that guys have to relate to each other in movies now.
And to your point, I mean, to a bigger point of what you're saying, it's The Hangover, because The Hangover is a multi-million dollar
right.
thing, and there aren't these little small, or if there are these small movies, they're not getting picked up by Miramax.
Right. The flip side would be something like Warrior, where it's like, okay, this is a movie about two guys who love each other and care about each other because they're brothers, but they also can only express that by beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah, I've not seen Warrior. It's in my Blockbuster at home.
All right, good.
But I do like that this movie reminds me of a time when, I mean, I'll rip on Ed Burns, but there is, I do think there's a charm with Brothers McMullen and She's the One.
Yeah.
And
well, we just kind of have a fondness for the period.
Yeah, too, absolutely. You know? And that's why, like, I kind of miss this kind of movie.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw Swingers, like you mentioned, it was on video, or I think it was maybe DVD, in 98. And I had just broken up, or it was 99.
Okay.
And I just broke up. So I was older when I saw it, I guess. Yeah. I was thinking it was 96, but it was 99. I had just broken up with a girl, and I watched it. And in theory, the movie almost seems to be a perfect movie for a breakup.
Right.
Because there's a lot of long conversations between Jon Favreau and Ron Livingston specifically about relationships. And I think that there's maybe one or two between Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn, but that's obviously much more geared towards Vince Vaughn's strengths and like, let's forget that girl, let's go out, let's go to Vegas, let's do this. Whereas Ron Livingston's a sympathetic ear and offers a lot of great advice. And honestly, so much of the advice, and I sound like I'm just blowing this movie, and but I do like it, is really great advice about how it's going to hurt less and less and less, and someday it just won't hurt anymore.
Right.
And how it doesn't work that way, that you're going to try and forget about her, but then when you want, like, one day you're just going to forget about her, and it's not going to be... It's just very interesting. But my point is, when I saw it, when I had just broken up, maybe I was in that place, and the movie talks about this briefly, where they say you kind of miss, once the pain goes away, you kind of miss that pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like a girlfriend, you miss it because you lived with it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was still in that place where I was kind of wallowing in just being sad.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sad, and especially, and not like I'm super dramatic or anything, but I think that there's definitely an element of all of us that, like, I'm depressed. I want to just be depressed. I don't want to go outside in the sun and run around. I want to sit in my room and watch a movie. And this movie was like, it gets better. And I'm like, no. And I actually remember turning it off and I was like, you know what? I'm not crazy about Swingers.
Really?
And I saw it like a year or two later. And I'm like, you know what? That movie's pretty great.
Even,
and then, yeah, watching it recently was awesome.
Even I'm surprised, because I would think, even if I didn't want to hear the bullshit that Ron Livingston was slinging, that by the end of the movie that you would at least be brought around a little bit, because I think it does such a good job of convincing you of, like, there are other possibilities. Like, I don't think it oversells the awesomeness of Heather Graham. I don't think it's like, she's the perfect woman, but like the scene where they talk is great and really kind of nails that feeling of like, I just met someone I really like.
You know what it is? And this might be completely crazy, and this might be too personal for the podcast.
Here goes, everyone.
If this is not good, honestly, cut this out.
Okay.
Because I really think part of my issue with the ending, back in 1999, and again, like, I had just broken up, or a girl broke up with me. I think it was the girl breaking up with me. So I was dumped. I was depressed. I was like, wah, poor me. I'm 20 years old and sad. I was in the 20s, not just 20 years old. And at the end, he meets Heather Graham.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know Patrick, his wife Erica, I think, looks a lot like Heather Graham.
Yeah, yeah.
Or did then, or does now, or whatever the case. There's definitely a... And by the way, Heather Graham is kind of an alien in Swingers, and that's not Erica. Erica's great. She's the best. But there's
her performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a similar look.
Yeah.
And I think when I saw it, I was thinking, well, that's the girl my best friend has. And I think that's such a weird thing, though. It's obviously a very personal whatever bullshit story, but I think that because the ending, I didn't take in what they were saying, I was looking at the surface, and I'm like, oh, Jon Favreau goes up to Patrick's future wife and starts to date her, and I'm still bummed because I lost my girlfriend and I don't have Erica. Not to say, like, I wanted Erica, but I'm just saying, that's the girl in the movie that I can't have. And you were happy.
I like this way because I come out the winner.
But that my point is, I think that that's, you know, that's what I responded to.
Right.
And that's such a weird kind of visceral gut reaction.
Yeah.
But I think just purely picking a blonde, and I'm like, my previous girlfriend was a brunette, and it's like, there's a blonde, and I'm like, I don't like blondes.
Mike has written about Swingers before, I think, because this was a movie that, like, used to get him through breakups. So I know it does work on people who aren't lusting after my wife.
Mike's much more than I am.
I saw the movie...
And Mike definitely lusts after your wife.
I saw the movie, I don't remember, 96 or 97. It was actually a movie that I, like, blind bought on Laserdisc, which I never did, because Laserdiscs were kind of expensive. Yeah. But I knew that I wanted to see it, and man, it paid off, because, like, I was just so relieved. I'm like, I like this movie so much. Yay! Yeah. Good job that it's not horrible. And I think whether I was in a good place or a bad place, I don't even know that I was dating anybody at the time or whatever, but just, like, I'm such a sucker for that last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I just love that scene in the bar, and I love the way that their dance builds in such a way. And there are some weird shots of her where, like, she really looks like she wants to fuck him.
Yeah, there's while they're dancing. And at one point she touches his, like, face, and I'm like, or she touches his stomach, like, and I'm like, I don't think a chick that you just met in a club is going to do that.
I don't know.
But maybe.
But again, I love the way it builds, too, that, like, it's this slow reveal that he's a really good dancer, right, like, because he doesn't just bust out right away with, like, I'm awesome. Like, it builds gradually.
Yeah, right. And I guess my point simply is, I think the movie works whether, and you said this, whether you're with someone, whether you're broken up with someone. But having just watched it recently... and my relationship is really good, like, I was able just to kind of not even think about it in those with those, with that context and just watch it as a movie. And I'm like, wow, the advice he's giving is good. The situations are real. They all seem like pretty fleshed out characters. And that's probably because, again, they are basically based in themselves. Yeah. I think the speech he gives, Vince Vaughn gives Mike, gives, I keep saying, like, I don't know, interchanging their characters' names. Vince Vaughn gives Jon Favreau about a bear with its claws and teeth. That's an actual speech from what I read that Vince Vaughn would give Jon Favreau. Like, you've got these teeth and these claws and you've got this bunny. You don't know how to kill it. You're a fucking bear.
Boy named Sue.
Right.
You know, the movie, I think, is very influenced, it seems like, by some early Woody Allen. That, like, that was sort of Jon Favreau's approach in that, like, there's this emotional through line of this guy who's hurt and he's trying to get over a breakup, but it's definitely sort of broken down into these little, like, sections, and the Vegas section is probably the longest, but then there's the section where he meets Brooke Langton in the bar and then calls her too many times, and there's the section at the end, and there's the dark period where he's just in his apartment.
It's not a typical sausage. Like, plot. I mean, the arc, like, the...
I don't want to say it's episodic, even though it is a little bit, but it never totally stands out as being such to me.
Yeah.
But when you think about the way that it's structured, it is kind of broken down into these pieces.
Well, your point about Vegas, that's the biggest set piece, and that's actually what a lot of people, and that's the most quotable, the Vegas baby is quoted all the time by douchebags.
Yeah.
And
that's reason enough to hate this movie.
But the movie's so great. what do you think about, this is such a weird, specific question about one specific thing, but what do you think about... In one of the first sequences, he goes home, he presses play on his answering machine.
That's when I knew that I really liked the movie.
But here's my point, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Like, the answering machine, what I'm saying is that he goes home, presses play, he's
it plays
desperately
a
waiting for, like, he wants a call from his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
It plays a couple messages, and then the answering machine starts talking to him.
Right.
It's the only time in the entire movie where it's, like, this absurdist, surreal element.
And again, that to me speaks of, like, sort of Annie Hall era Woody Allen, where it's
it almost seems out of place when I'm, like, kind of almost expecting more of it later in the movie. And it's fine that it doesn't work, because why should it have this, like, structure where, like, well, we introduced it in the first act, we have to introduce it in the...
Right, but I totally agree with that. In Inglourious Basterds, every time where it says, like, Hugo Stiglitz on the screen, and then Samuel Jackson gives a background, but that's the only character that he does that for, you're like, well, what the fuck is that doing?
Right.
Do it for all the guys if you're going to do it for one. And for whatever reason,
you're not ripping on Inglourious Basterds.
Maybe because it's so early in the movie that I forgot that it had done it. But I remember very specifically the first time I watched it, when it got to that scene, which is very early. I loved that so much because I was like, it's funny, and I'd never seen a movie do that before.
Right.
And maybe because I wasn't expecting those sort of weird little flights of fancy or whatever you want to call them, you know? Like, I really like that. There are sections in the movie that I still can't watch, and it's my own weird thing where, like, it's well documented. I don't deal with discomfort well, but, like, the scene where he's calling Brooke Langton over and over again is a good scene, and I think speaks to the way that people, but specifically, I think guys, handle certain situations badly.
That's the scene that kind of sticks out to you, because there's so many scenes, like, when he's talking to the girls, and he says, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, we all have our stories. And yeah. Like, but, which, we all have our stories makes me laugh just because that has lived on.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
That's the line that we quote the most from Swingers.
But there's so many situations where it's sprinkled.
No, a lot of the Vegas in the trailer I have a hard time watching.
Yeah.
But that scene where he calls Brooke, and I could even handle the Brooke Langton scene if she didn't finally pick up and say, like, don't call. If it was just a series of him calling.
But it wouldn't pay off. She needs to do that almost. You know?
Right, I know. Except, but like, however, I could handle it. But I knowing that, like, oh, he's going to get
it could have ended, though. It could
shut down.
It could have ended with him being like, you know what? This just isn't working out. Right. Because he does go that route. And then they do the coda.
Yeah, and I could probably handle that. I'm fascinated, too. Not fascinated. That's the wrong word. I appreciate the fact
you're turned on
that
by
the movie.
The dudes.
The
in
girl
the movie.
With the cigar. I want to have. Baby,
she's in Starship Troopers. What's her name? Blake.
That sounds right. She's Auburn or redhead.
She perished with the mighty bugs in the first
you
half
may
of
remember
Starship
her
Troopers.
From the first hour of Starship.
I recommend
Troopers.
Everyone read the bio of this girl we're talking about. It's the funniest
cigar
thing.
Girl.
It's the worst written.
But again, and that's a great little moment. I think the movie is really smart in the way that it observes things in a very small way. And again, maybe we're overselling Swingers, and I'm sure people are listening to this like, you guys are way too in love with Swingers, because I didn't know I was.
It
but
holds
I think it does
up.
And I think it does some things really right. Like, I think it really nails this awful actressy type of woman that maybe only exists in LA, but I feel like we've known versions of her out here in Chicago. I mean, the movie is very LA focused. The conversations that they have about acting and just like, I want to be goofy and like the payoff to that, Ron Livingston, like, oh, I'd kill for that part.
Like, I like the part too, like where the guy from Becker is like, at least it's Disney.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great,
great
line too. But real, another quick tiny side note, my wife is from Los Angeles and so much of it is like, I can't even imagine if it was like a Chicago-based movie, how it would have we would even like it more, because it's like it so takes place in this little universe, as you pointed out.
But it's also very, I think, critical of Los Angeles, because it's written from the point of view of a guy from New York who moved out here and is like kind of jaded with what he's found,
right?
And hasn't had success yet. You know, it's interesting. Now he goes on to direct Iron Man and Iron Man 2, and he's this
and Cowboy. Don't forget Cowboys and Aliens
and Zathura. He's this huge. Director.
Just stop right there. He's huge. He was Monica's boyfriend in Friends, and he
sure
was the MMA fighter.
I really respect the fact that the movie, you know...
You're fascinated by the fact.
It's not... It doesn't paint these guys out to be losers. They're not wannabes. You know?
Yeah.
They're not necessarily, like, studs, but, like, they get into clubs. They're able to talk to women. They have some success. They're kind of part of a scene. So they're not losers on the outside looking in. They're not, it's not fucking Entourage where just like they are on another planet.
Right.
So it acknowledges that like this is kind of working for them. But it also acknowledges how much fucking work it is, how hard it is to like be at all these different places. Where are we going to go? There's just a shot where they sit down in a booth. It's near the end when they're at the club where he meets Heather Graham. They sit down in a booth. And they just adjust themselves in such a way that,
it's their pose.
They have to look cool.
Right.
And again, it's not even, it's not totally passing judgment. And I just wonder about, you know, the guys that watch this, that just Vegas baby, your money, do they see that side of it?
No, I mean,
because I feel like those are the guys doing the same poses at clubs.
You had talked briefly before about the last two scenes with Vince Vaughn undercuts his whole power, his charisma, where he makes an ass of himself in the diner. Then the next scene at the diner, he's flirting with a mom, doesn't realize...
Maddie Corman.
The mom is talking to a baby.
From Adventures in Fort Fairly.
These people don't see those two scenes. Right. They see, like, big money, honey babies, come on. You're all grown up and you're all grown up. I mean, because, let's be honest, that's funny. It's a funny thing, but it's like, it still is like, oh my God, don't be that character. But sometimes...
I do love the moment, though, before he starts flirting with Maddie Corman... When Jon Favreau is recounting the story of like how he didn't take the call from Michelle or whatever, Vince Vaughn's reactions are so great. Yeah. Like
I was like right after he's like, "So what happened? You called him? You didn't call him?"
And that's how it ends.
Yeah,
then it cuts to black. Oh, it's terrific. It's terrifically entertaining. In
the
words of Adam Scott,
I can't. I can't believe watching it now with 16 years.
Good
is that
Lord,
how old it is?
Yeah.
Of age, of time, how much this movie has permeated. That's a big word for me. How much of this movie has kind of seeped in and taken hold, and the dialogue and the stylization, all these things that like have kind of, well, that's from Swingers, which is such a small little movie.
Right.
And so much of it, I mean, not only the money stuff, but just like a lot of like Wingman, I think, was introduced in this movie.
Really?
I think so. There's a scene where it's Wingman, and I don't remember it ever being before this
movie. Hello. Hello.
And I'm also kind of interested in, it did blow up a lot of people with their careers, and I think the most successful person is Jon Favreau. Doug Liman has obviously had a lot of success, but he, aside from directing the first Bourne movie and producing, I think, the next two, he hasn't really done too much.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith was
Before Bourne, wasn't it, or after?
No, that was after.
Okay.
It went Go, and then Bourne, and then Mr.
Wow, Go,
Mr.
Go to Bourne, wow.
And then Jumper.
Yeah, and then Fair Game.
Apart, and then Fair Game, which got good reviews, but didn't get like much of a wide release.
Yeah, but it's like that was in 10. And it's, I don't know what's really come, but Jon Favreau is like, he's the A-list go-to guy now for all this. And Vince Vaughn is Vince Vaughn. But you know, not to knock his looks only, because it's like you do, but I do feel like, you're to your point, like, it's unhealthy. Is he stung by a bee? He's bloated. Is it like, not to say like you should lose weight.
He just looks like hungover. It's not even a weight issue. It's just, I always feel like he just woke up and somebody dragged him to the set.
Right. Right.
I don't know. And you know,
yeah,
whatever. It's a weird movie because so many people have seen it. It's like this cult movie that everyone has seen, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think it means, I think it holds a special place in the hearts of a lot of people for different reasons. Even the douchebag guys that I'm kind of ripping on, like, they love the movie Swingers because they're like, that's me and my friends. And as much as I'm like, I don't have anything in common with you guys, I can appreciate the fact that you have a movie that means a lot to you for whatever reason.
Well, it's that same thing too, where it's, you know, when there's such a specific movie, meaning like we're not part of this scene. We didn't grow up in LA or move to LA in the mid 90s.
I did.
But there still
it was like a Tuesday through Friday.
When you're so specific.
I made it big. I had it all, but I lost it just as quickly.
When you're so specific about art and music, you know, lyrics and music or poetry, whatever, it becomes more universal. So, like, yeah, I don't have that scene, but I have a relationship with, like, you that I can talk to, like, you know.
Right, right.
It's like,
and, and that's probably part of what we respond to, too, is the way that, like, they talk to each other is the way that you and I talk to each other.
Sure.
And I don't, you know. That's not a common male relationship that's depicted in movies.
Yeah, I think that's the key.
Men don't talk about their feelings in movies.
The last thing I'll say is just that I was also like really pleased and surprised by how, I don't think there's a bad scene in the movie. It's a pretty quick, tight movie. There's not a lot of filler. There's some stuff that might be a little longer that I'd like, perhaps, but it's still like everything, like them at the casino, like gambling with the money, and everything, not only so much that every scene kind of is quick and funny, but it also means something. It reveals stuff about their characters.
Right.
Like when they're ordering food or when they're, you know, how they go to clubs and why they're driving like this. And all these things are very explicitly for the, you know, the movie to move forward.
Right.
And I just, it's a really tight little thing, but it's also not a traditional three act, whatever.
No, because again, that all that Vegas stuff is right up front.
Right, like, up front. Yeah. Before you even meet some of the other friends.
Right. I mean, it could almost be taken out of the movie, and obviously, you know, it's not for a reason, but like the movie wouldn't, you could still have a movie there, you know, it would be 20 minutes shorter or whatever. But I like almost from the very beginning that the movie is sort of undercutting a lot of this guy bravado, like we're awesome and life's awesome and we own the town or whatever, because it starts with them, you know, driving to Vegas and it's Vegas, baby, woo! And within not too long, they're like completely deflated because like, oh, this is a long drive and it's boring and like we're not super awesome all the time. I just like that it has that beat in there because everybody's experienced that. Just like you get super excited for something and you're like, oh, I still have to wait 4 hours before we're actually there. Right. I don't know. It makes me, do you think that, because Jon Favreau hasn't necessarily written a lot of stuff post-Swingers, with the exception of, I think, Maid. He might have written a couple other things.
And Maid was almost like a kind of a fake sequel, if you will. Not really.
And
at
I'm
all.
Not
different
the
characters.
World's biggest fan of Maid.
That's so. You bring that up.
Maybe I need to watch
it
again.
I have not thought about Maid since I saw it, and I bought it on DVD, and I like shelved it in the M's.
Right.
And I have like.
That's good. That's where it belongs.
I don't think I've even like considered it to watch, but I own it. It's
Well, and but that was the reason that, you know, people were kind of excited about made when it came out, which was like, oh, it's Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn again
redoing
Swingers, in theory.
It just doesn't have the same chemistry. It's like, they're different characters. They're not as likable. They're, it's not as fun. Even though, like, Jon Favreau doesn't have fun in Swingers, but it's like, it's a fun movie.
And it's kind of missing that emotional through line, too, you know, which is what makes Swingers work. So do you think that maybe he hasn't written as much since then, because, you know, they say this all the time about directors or writers, where you have your whole life to write your first movie, because that's what he did. You know, he took 30 years of experience or whatever and wrote it all into Swingers. And then once that's out, it's like,
I think that's a big
now
part of it.
What? Right. Because he wrote his life, basically.
I think that's a huge part of it. I also think that the appeal of directing to him is obviously always attracted him.
Yeah.
And I think that he doesn't have a hard time sleeping on top of his giant pile of money. So.
And I don't know even how much of the movie, you know, because so many of the things that we like or are responding to are, you know, things that Vince Vaughn would just say in life or whatever. So as much as I want to say, like, great job writing the screenplay, Jon Favreau.
Right.
He maybe doesn't deserve all of the credit. I don't
Perhaps not. I got to think that he polished the edges and, you know, and brushed it up and made it more exaggerated. Right. But still, yeah, if the bear speech from what I read is verbatim from Vince Vaughn, you know, so be it.
All right, so we're done talking about Swingers?
I think so.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. remember, you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com if you're all like, Swingers? What are you guys freaking out about?
What's your problem?
Why do you love Swingers so much?
Stop blowing each other.
It's the movie where the guy has the giant martini glass, right? On the cover.
And the matchbook that says Swingers.
Trying to hand it to me. Did you ever see the DVD cover art for a movie, I think, called Late Last Night?
No.
Emilio Estevez and Steven Weber?
Never.
Everyone look that up on either Amazon or IMDb. Late Last Night, I believe it's called. When we're done here, I'll pull it up.
Okay. That's your teaser, that's your clip.
Well, it takes more than a page from Swingers. It's like somebody's trying to trick you into, like, I think I got Swingers. No.
Late Last Night.
Steven Weber's not in Swingers.
He should have been,
that's what would have helped. Anyway, thank you guys for listening very much. Doug, thank you for talking about Swingers.
No problem.
And go ahead and take us out.
Hey, Scotty, yeah, what's it gonna be to bear a little gin and tonic? Sounds mighty, mighty good to me.